John Friend.
All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Tuesday, March 19th, 2019, and this is a pre-recorded edition of The Realist Report. Of course, my website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of The Realist Report podcasts, as well as other radio programs I've participated in. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, and many other useful and important links. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to The Barnes Review, the bi-monthly history magazine affiliated with American Free Press. I encourage listeners to subscribe to these fine print publications. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for all of the details. Okay, with that said, let me introduce our special guest this evening. Jim Gillen is joining us in this very special edition of The Realist Report. Jim is the father of Tom Gillen, who was arrested last October on federal conspiracy to riot charges for his participation in the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia in August of 2017. Jim, welcome to the program, sir. How are you this evening?
Good, John. How are you?
I am doing very well. Thank you very much for joining us. And before we get started, I just wanted to mention, we were actually put in touch by a mutual friend, Glenn Allen, and also Chris Petherick, the editor of American Free Press. So I want to thank those gentlemen for getting us together and allowing us to do this podcast, to do this interview. This is probably long overdue. I've been following what's been going on with a lot of the individuals associated with RAM and many other groups that have been, in my mind, totally unjustly prosecuted by the federal government and also probably, you know, local and state authorities as well. Further participation at the Unite the Right rally and many other political rallies over the course of the past couple of years. So I've been following pretty closely what's been going on, and it's really, you know, quite an honor to speak with somebody like yourself who's been so impacted on, you know, in such a personal level. So I just wanted to mention that before we get started. And just to kind of, you know, introduce the topic, introduce the conversation, could you kind of just tell us a little bit about yourself? I know you're, you know, a fellow Southern Californian like myself, so you want to just briefly give us a little bit of background?
I'm Jim Gillen. I've been a fire captain at a local oil refinery here in Los Angeles for, I've worked there since for about 30 years almost. I myself am somewhat of a moderate. I voted for Reagan. I voted for Obama. I don't love the Democratic platform in all ways, but I thought it was time that, you know, the black people felt that they were definitely part of in representing government. I thought it was the right thing to do. So I'm not really on a fringe of either political scene.
Okay, very good. Yeah, that was one of the first topics I wanted to get into. Is I wanted you to kind of describe your political views, because, you know, Tom, of course, and many other people involved not only with RAM, but I guess the broader alt-right or kind of white nationalist type movement have been totally smeared as, you know, white supremacists and racists and, you know, anti-Semites and, you know, words like this. So I wanted you to kind of describe your political views and let us know, do you fall into that category? Are you, you know, sympathetic to like the alt-right or white nationalist type views? And it sounds like you're basically sort of a political moderate. In fact, you've, you know, voted Democrat in the past. So did you vote for President Trump in the last election?
No, I voted for neither. I definitely did not like Hillary Clinton, and I wasn't a super fan of Trump at the time, although I have some growing appreciation for some things that he's done.
Okay, understood. So you're basically probably like, you know, most average Americans, maybe not too politically connected, not too politically involved. Is that fairly accurate?
I don't go to a lot of protests. I do follow politics quite a bit. I see great beauty in both parties at times, and I see incredible fallacies in both parties at times. So I tend to go with what's appropriate for the country at the time. In my
okay,
field.
Sure, I totally understand. Well, let's jump right into it. Tom is your son, obviously, and he was arrested. I think it would have been last October, so October of 2018, roughly 5 months ago. And if I understand the timeline correctly, him and four other individuals associated with the Rise Above movement, they were arrested in California and transported back to Virginia. Is that correct? To face federal charges in the state of Virginia?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, before we really get into those details, can you kind of just tell us, you know, who is Tom? What's he like? What type of person is he? Can you kind of give us, you know, some background on your son?
Tom Gill, you know, every parent wants to say this, but it's just so easy for me, is that just Tom is just the best son a father could have. I mean, we have a very close relationship. He helps me. I have a little fishing boat, and he's the driving force between keeping that thing, you know, afloat, literally. He's very talented and helps me with the engines, helps me work on stuff with it. He's a really a curious guy. He's not one of those people that says, I don't understand how this thing works, so I'm afraid of it. He's like, I don't understand how this thing works, so I'm going to take it apart and I'm going to figure it out. He's a very, very good go-getter and very talented kid. He's a very nice person. He's a very honorable person. I've known Tom for a long time, and he's definitely not somebody that hates people based on whatever, race, creed, opinion. Tom can have a conversation with someone from any background, and as well as myself. I mean, I believe that it's okay to have a different opinion for myself. And Tom acts the same way.
Now, I'm assuming, I mean, he graduated high school, I would assume, somewhere out here in the Los Angeles area. Was he a good student? Was he working? Could you kind of maybe, you know, describe what type of student he was, what type of profession he had, if he was working, or any of those details?
Tom did not want to go to college. Tom was just like, you know, I don't see it. I don't see myself making computer apps or whatever it is. And, you know, so of course, at first I'd encouraged him to go to college and, you know, and tried breathing down on him. And at some point I realized, you know what, he's just not interested. You know, I didn't go to Yale either. And so there's plenty of things you can do in America that don't entail having a college degree. It doesn't mean you don't have to be educated either. You can do a lot to educate yourself. So I told Tom, I said, well, you need to learn a trade, because this country is out of people that know how to do trades. You know, we got plenty of people that can make apps, but we're really short on welders, because I noticed all the welders that I see are from some other country we're having to bring in here. So he went to El Camino College, and he did excellent. He was an excellent student there, because he was doing something he loved doing, which was learning how to weld. And he went there for a couple of years and learned how to do exotic welds and stuff. And I got him a job with a great guy that I worked with. He started his own company. And Tom has a great relationship with where he works. And he was making $30 an hour. So he was as a learning welder. You know, a top welder out here makes about $60 an hour. So, and that's where he was headed. So with his other mechanical skills that he has, in addition to being a welder, and working on motorcycles, I've had friends of mine that are very good, excellent, like best in the state, motorcycle mechanics that have took him under their wing, taught him, and really liked him. So Tom's obviously very easy to work with, because he's worked with some people that are geniuses in their own right and not easy to work with, and they all appreciated Tom.
Okay, very good. So he was a very productive individual, you know, was involved in a skilled trade, was actively employed, had good relationship with his employer, with his family. Did he have any previous run-ins with the law?
He had a couple problems when he was just about 18, and you know, he got it's a long, stupid story, but he ended up with a gun that was not his. It was a friend's, but someone had filed the serial numbers off it. It wasn't, and he got caught with it, and so he got dinged for that. But no, I mean, he wasn't one to go running around getting in fights, starting trouble, et cetera. He's always been pretty, like you put it, very productive. That's a good word for Tom. He's productive. He's always okay. Doing something.
Okay. Very good. Yeah. And you know what, if you, anybody out there, if you have read anything about Tom or the Rise Above movement, the mainstream mass media is quick to point this sort of thing out. Oh, you know, he had a previous run-in with the law. He had a, you know, an illegal weapon. And, you know, so this is something that always comes up. So I just wanted to, you know, get that clarified and get your take on it. But it, you know, again, it sounds like, you know, he was actively employed. He was, you know, again, a very productive individual and definitely on the right track. What do you know about the RAM organization, the Rise Above movement, and Tom's participation with the organization? How long was he a member? It sounds like he was pretty involved with the organization, but what do you know about it, and what do you know about Tom's participation with the group?
I don't know all those answers accurately. I know he's been a friend of Ben Daly's for a long time. And you know, Ben's been over here to the house, and I know that Ben's also another guy that's pretty, you know, he's always looking for something to do. He's trying to figure out, you know, they're young men. They're trying to figure out who am I going to be? What's my life going to be like? What am I going to do? And both of those guys were doing, working as tree cutters, basically tree surgeons, doing high angle, tree cutting. And as far as the group itself, I didn't know much about it at the time. You know, we've had some arguments about it because when it first started coming up, I'm like, hey, wait a minute. Now, I guess I got to back up and say, yeah, I was a regular, pretty much just rolling along. Everything's pretty okay in America type guy. And sadly for me, this has kind of ruined my life because it's really brought an awareness to me of, oh my God, this, all the stuff that we used to say that the right winger, you know, that the J. Edgar Hoovers did and that the Joseph McCarthy did. The more I learn about this, it seems to be inverted now and it seems to be going the other direction, but just as extreme. So I kind of am forced to sympathize with Tom's views. In other words, there are certain things you can't say in this country, even just floating an idea out there without being attacked. Without, you know, I had never heard of Antifa before. I've been, you know, since all this stuff has come up, I've been researching these guys, and it's like, look, you know, these guys on their very reasons for existence is to cause disturbances so that people can't speak. You know, to me, the more I learn about these guys, the Antifa seems to be the most fascist group that I can think of in America today that I've ever come across. So, I believe Tom's group is basically, they feel that that America is great and has been great because it was created by our forefathers, and their feeling is that if we over allow immigration into this country, that we'll dilute that thinking, that we'll lose it. In other words, that it'll get smothered by something else, which is, you know, that's hardly a hate statement. That to me sounds like a rational statement, and I'm not mad at anybody. It's like, yeah, I can understand that if we invited all of, I don't care, Sweden, to, you know, if we allowed too many Swedish to come to New York and Los Angeles, eventually you're going to start changing your dynamic. And they also felt that, I think their larger feeling is that the left in this country is moving things sort of just, kind of moving the needle, as they say. They're trying to influence thought farther and farther left, and it's becoming almost a crime to have blue eyes, essentially. And it's, you know, a blue-eyed man tends to be the scapegoat for all that's evil and terrible with America. And their feeling, and I have to agree, is that I think this is the greatest country in the world, and I think we've come a long way. I think we've come from some dark places at times, but show me a better one. I can't, you know, I think we're doing racial relations, I think, are good. I mean, I know I have good relations with other races. But what he points out, and he makes an excellent point, is two of my best friends are black. And for me to say that as a white guy almost automatically throws me into a cliche group of, oh yeah, he's one of those guys. It's like, no, I'm not. I'm like, literally two of my best friends are black. Why is that? You know, why can't I say that? And, I think that's the kind of things that were bothering the boys. And it was bothering them that they were, that the left, I guess at Charlottesville was saying, yeah, there's been a movement to take down all the historical statues in the South because they feel that that these statues are mortifying the black people. Now, that's from what I understand about black people. I haven't worked with them for a long time, you know, not just talking about them at college, but there's a wide disparity of thoughts from black people, just like there are from white people. There's certain, you can always find a few people of any color to say something. That doesn't mean they all feel that way. But I'm sure some do. But at the same time, there's people from the South where General Lee saved this town from being destroyed by the Union Army. So he's kind of a hero of that town. Just like Thomas Jefferson is a hero to a lot of us. Well, actually, it turns out he had slaves and et cetera, et cetera. You have to judge people by the times that they lived in. And no great person is without flaws. So you don't just say, yeah, but he did get a lot of tickets when he was a kid, you know, he drank and drive. Yeah. Well, then I guess that negates everything he's ever done that was good. No, that's I think Tom's friends felt that the lefties had taken over Charlottesville and they were saying, now's our chance. Let's cut out down all these statues. And they were disappointed because there wasn't a vote of, you know, everybody's feelings. It was just some city council members just said, you know, like six city council members just decided to do it because they were pushed to by, I guess they felt like some leftist groups were just kind of on a tirade about it.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? It's interesting because I totally sympathize with Tom's political views and probably his racial views. I don't know, you know, exactly what he would say if I were to ask him that question. But this is something this is something that, you know, I've been learning about and studying and writing about and talking about for a very long time. And I think it's very, very clear that there is basically a war on white people in America. You know, if you look at the way our history is taught, if you look at the way, you know, white people are represented in the media and whatnot, you know, we're basically blamed for all of the problems in the world. And I think that's a totally distorted and highly, truly weaponized version of history, right? I mean, you know, there's always two sides to every story, but everything is so one-sided, certainly when it comes to the mainstream presentation of things. And I think that there's a lot of young people that are starting to see through this to where, I mean, truly in America, it's not okay to be white anymore. And that's a big problem. And from what I understand about the Rise Above movement, it's often described as like an alt-right fight club that engages in violence. And, you know, like
preemptively, show me their list of victims.
Right. Exactly. That's the thing. I mean, it's described this way. And you know, they're often accused of preemptively attacking their political rivals at some of these, you know, these rallies. I don't know exactly his participation in all the different rallies that went on over the course of the election season back in, you know, 2015, 2016, and then certainly, you know, the Unite the Right rally. They were obviously at that rally, but I also understand that the Rise Above movement was involved in some other political rallies as well, here in California especially. And, you know, it's described as this, you know, sort of violent organization when really, I think if you're trying to get a better understanding of what the group is all about, it seemed to be all about self-improvement. From what I understand, they were all about physical fitness and training, you know, martial arts and things like this, and you know, bettering themselves, you know, not doing drugs, not drinking excessively, you know, getting a good job, being productive, starting a family, these sorts of things. So it was almost like a self-improvement type organization.
They're probably very anti-drug.
Yeah, that seems to me a much more accurate way to describe what the group is all about. And you know, I was not involved with this group. I was familiar with it. I knew some people that were sort of involved with it, but that's kind of my impression of it. And you know, I don't see what's so wrong with that, frankly.
I certainly don't see what's illegal about that, but nor do I see what's wrong with it, because I'm starting to get my feelings hurt a little bit. Because so I have black friends. I have a great amount of Hispanic friends. That's a large amount of the people who I work with. And so I have to think, what are they going to think if they see this in writing? And what are they going to think about me doing an audio interview and saying some of these things? And so I have deeply. And I've talked to them about these things, and they're just like, no, we got your back. We understand where you're coming from, because this kind of thing has happened to us before, too. We've been on the wrong side of the FBI. We can sympathize with this. You know, there's a commonality here. And so I guess what I get upset about is it's like, look, I base my relations with other races based on my life experience of working with them hand in hand, not what's being discussed. And I'm not going to be told how I'm supposed to react and work with other people by some kids in a leftist college that have never done anything. That just seems ludicrous. But that seems to be who has the ball these days, and the perspective of the general media. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm being talked down to from people that don't know as much about this as I do. And sure. And it's annoying.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally understand and sympathize with you. You know, you had mentioned that Tom was good friends with Ben Daly, and Ben Daly was like one of the leading figure in the Rise Above movement, from what I understand anyways, or he was one of them. He was like one of the top leaders of the group. And he's, of course, been smeared as, you know, like a racist, you know, a violent racist at that, a white supremacist, etc. And you've described him as, you know, a pretty normal guy, a pretty productive guy that was working and, you know, wanted to better himself and better his community and whatnot. What do you know about some of the other members of RAM, or do you? Do you know anything about?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
Okay.
I just know Ben and as from being Tom's friend for at least, I would say, about 7 years.
Okay. At least five. Gotcha. But again, it's in your mind, this was not, well, it sounds like you weren't like too familiar and too involved with what they were doing with the group. It was something kind of in the background that you weren't too knowledgeable about. Is that accurate to say?
I think yes. At the time, I've had to acquaint myself since all this hit the fan, so I've been learning more about it. And so one of the things I had a problem with, and you know, I had a problem with Tom with, is I'm just like, so why are we mad at the Jews? Because you know, from where I stand, hey, you know, the nice thing about the Jews is they never knock on my door and tell me how to act. Never happened. You know what I mean? And so, and I had some friends in school that were Jewish, and you know, my parents are from New York. So anyway, it's a bit of an anomaly, you know. The Gillens are not a largely known anti-Jew family. So Tom said it's not the problem with the Jews. So then he gave me some books. So you know, we made a deal. I disagreed with him at first on a lot of things, and I said, well, I'll read one of your books. You read one of my books. And so we would kind of do a book exchange on stuff. And so from what I understand, Jewishness in itself is kind of confusing, because it's like, well, are they a religion? Are they a nation? Are they a race? What are they? You know, when I say I'm mad at a Jew, what am I saying? So I think it's still confusing. I'm not sure. But what Tom's feeling is they're not mad at the religion. But they feel that there was a movement of some Jews that led to the Frankfurt Institute and a lot of left-leaning activity and major support. And they supported a lot of this leftist type of thinking that they think is what's kind of diluting the country. And so I wish when they were with the tiki torches, I guess Jews will not replace us is what they were recorded saying, but I wish they could have been a little more clear. I wish they just said the Frankfurt Institute will not replace us or something like that. But at any rate, nobody I know is actively mad at Jews as a religion or a race or a country. But
sure, yeah, and you know what? It's so difficult. Well, it's very difficult talking about race in general. You know, because it's such a controversial topic. Unless, of course, you're like blaming white people for everything, and tearing down white people. That's easy to do. That's very mainstream and very acceptable. To present a pro-white perspective is a little bit more controversial. To say anything critical about Jews is extremely controversial, extremely taboo in our society. Something that I've kind of learned the hard way over the years, unfortunately. And really, I think what it boils down to, at least in my perspective, you know, I certainly, you know, couldn't speak for Ram, certainly, or for Tom or anybody else. But I think it's fairly accurate to say that this war on white people, this radical left wing, the radical left, I guess, in general, that's sort of taken over our society, really sort of emanates from the organized Jewish community, from, you know, radical, just outright anti-white Jewish activists and Jewish intellectuals and people that, you know, not only were ethnically Jewish, but strongly identified as Jews and were acting in a way that they felt advanced Jewish collective interests at the expense of white people. And I think that's very, very clear. There have been a number of books that have been written about this subject. Probably one of the most important ones, I'm not sure if Tom recommended this book to you, but it's a book called Culture of Critique by Dr. Kevin MacDonald.
That's the one he gave me, yes.
Right, yeah. It's a very, very influential book in the alt-right, and not only the alt-right, but I guess the sort of the broader white nationalist movement. In fact, Dr. Kevin MacDonald has been a guest on this program a number of times, including just not this past weekend, but the weekend before he was a guest. So we were talking about a number of topics, including President Trump and, you know, the immigration debate and a number of other topics. And I think he really explains these things very, very well. And, you know, he kind of describes it as like a Jewish evolutionary strategy that you know, again, they're basically at war with what they perceive to be white Western Christian civilization. And I think that war is manifested in various ways, including cultural Marxism, which, you know, you briefly mentioned with, you know, the whole Frankfurt School. But also when it comes to immigration, I mean, the way America's immigration policies have changed over the course of the past 100 years or so have been a direct result of Jewish lobbying and, you know, Jewish pressure and even Jewish individuals like in Congress and in our own government. So it's something that's been studied pretty extensively and pretty well documented. It's not some, you know, far-fetched conspiracy theory. It's pretty well documented. And you even see it, you know, right out in the open today. I mean, it's really no secret. You can follow a group like the Anti-Defamation League, for example, or any number of other explicitly, openly Jewish groups, and you see the type of policies that they're promoting. They're promoting open borders. They're promoting this idea that white people are evil and, you know, a number of other very far left policies that are detrimental to the interests of America and certainly to the interests of white America. And go ahead.
I don't see everything as that cut and dry. So I read through the book. I didn't get the impression that Mr. MacDonald was saying, yeah, so all Jews suck. I mean, I think he was saying that there are some of them and they have done this, but I don't think he was saying all Judaism is at fault. Like, I don't think any of us believe that every Jew in the world is part of this conspiracy. This is a group of people who are Jewish who are doing this. But the other thing I would expect after World War II, I would expect some defensiveness from Jews. I would expect some aggressive, I'm not surprised by this behavior. I would expect them to be, you know, aggressive, defensive. What we do with that, I'm still weighing things. I'm never going to read one book and go, well, that's the way it is. So I'm not done figuring this out. I'd have to get more books from opposing viewpoints and I have to look at them and compare them, because that's just the only way I can do something. You know, I have to look at a wide variety of sources. I can't. But I will say that I read his book, and that he made some excellent points that were obvious truths. And I could see from looking him up online and other stuff that, yeah, so they said, oh, you're a hater. You know, they quickly tried to, you know, make a demon out of him. So I didn't think he was saying things that they needed to make a demon out of him for, that I didn't see him as a Jew hater in this book myself.
Sure. Yeah, no, and I totally understand. And I certainly wasn't trying to say that myself either. You know, I'm not trying to like blame every single individual Jew by any means. I guess I'm just, when I say the Jews, I'm really meaning the organized Jewish community, organized Jewish groups, and Jewish activists that identify explicitly and proudly as Jews. That's really kind of what I'm referring to. But anyways, I don't want to get bogged down in that. We could probably...
We've proven how easy it is to get in trouble, but being on the subject, it's really tricky.
Yeah, it is. It is a very tricky, a very controversial topic, no doubt about it. But anyways, let's kind of jump back into Tom's situation. Clearly he was involved with the RAM organization. They were involved in various types of political activism. And I know they attended, a number of political rallies in California, but of course also at the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, which is where really a lot of this trouble stems from. And I guess I just want to ask you, what is your impression of the Unite the Right rally and Tom's, attendance and participation in that rally?
So my impression of... it's still kind of growing. My first impression, my immediate impression is, why the hell would you go fly out to Charlottesville to tell these people whether they need to have statue in their town or not? Let them figure it out. Because I don't believe in solving issues outside. I believe in keeping my own stuff together. You know what I mean? First. But then that seems like, well, that's not exactly what they were doing. And so, because actually I first learned about this through media sources too. So I had to sit him down and talk to him, and go, son, what the hell are you doing? And so Tom was able to give me a rational explanation. I'm not sure that I would have, I'm definitely sure I would not have gotten on that plane with him. It's not, but I will say this, the fact that getting on that plane and going to a protest that you have legally fought for the right to have and has been found and was approved by literally a federal judge, and then to be arrested for it, that to me is opening an entire new field of what it's like to be an American, because I would be angry if they arrested the opposite people for this as well. You know, if they grabbed a couple random Antifa guys and threw them up on federal charges for the same thing, I would be, even though the Antifa makes a point of actively saying that they're there to cause a riot. I mean, that's pretty much part of their statement of effect. To put somebody up against 10 years in federal prison is insane for what was going on by anybody there, other than, disregarding the whole people getting ran over. I don't know anything about that. I wasn't there, but as far as the protest portion of this goes, no. So,
right. Now, did you know, did he tell you that he was going before he, flew out there?
No.
Okay. So you didn't even know until after the fact. I got you.
No. Uh-uh. So, and I didn't know about at the time about, so there was, a Trump rally in Huntington Beach that was attacked by the Antifa, and there was several rallies at Berkeley where a right wing type of person was supposed to be able to speak at Berkeley University. And so what a bunch of lefties do is they just, but basically their doctrine is, hey, we're going to raise so much hell that the cops are going to have to shut this down and the guy's not going to get to speak. So they're basically saying, yeah, they're the closest thing to professional riot insiders that there are in America right now. That's really their MO. And what I don't get is how nobody gets this. Other than if you look at, if your only source for news on this is ProPublica's tape that they very heavily weighted against Tom's group and absolutely failed to report. If you look at what happened at Berkeley and you look at the police reports and you look at the official reports, they all said, yeah, the Antifa guys went nuts and started hucking rocks through windows and in an effort to shut this down. That's not Tom's group saying that. That's not a right winger saying it. That's what the cops in Berkeley, which I don't think is probably an extreme right town, right? That's what their conclusion was. That's what the university police conclusion was. So how these guys got to skip over all that and then just try and paint these other guys as demons. And then bizarrely, I can't even believe this. So then after nobody picks up their story, they make a big stink with how come no one's picking up our story? How come nobody's doing anything about this? They dump it on the feds, and this bothers me a lot. Federal Bureau of Investigation. What do those words mean? I would expect them to do at least a cursory investigation on what's going on. I mean, they don't even have Tom's age right. They say he's been arrested for DUI. I'm not even sure they're talking about my kid, because I guarantee you right now he's not 34 years old, as reported by everybody. He's not, and he's been there since October. It seems like somebody could have figured this out by now, right? But so they just take a plain value, this tape made by Antifa, and that's, you know, when they seize all his computers and all this stuff, as a father, you're like, oh my God, what was that kid into? What don't I know? And so, you know, you're in fear that, they found something that you don't know about or whatever. No. So the feds have had to present their case. And I was shocked that their case is this tape from ProPublica, and that's it. There's about 7 seconds of it where somebody that could be Tom, you can't really see his face, is in a scuffle, like a schoolyard scuffle with some other person you can't identify at all. And that makes him, up against 10 years in prison? That's it. And it wasn't at Charlottesville. That's what's amazing. Nobody's saying that these guys did anything wrong at Charlottesville other than attended. So,
it's incredible, right? Yeah. It's a joke. I mean, it's a total disgrace to our justice system, no doubt.
I think I'm starting to figure it out, actually. I've been thinking pretty heavily about this for 5 months now. And, you know, before we were born, you had J. Edgar Hoover running the FBI. And who were the FBI? And why did everybody get mad at the FBI? Because they were pretty much nonpartisan, a third political party. They became a power broker because he didn't just pick on the left and he didn't just pick on the right. He got dirt on everybody, right? Doesn't everybody, kind of agree that J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI were playing dirty pool? I don't think the left would say no. I don't think the right would say no. I don't think anything's changed. Because I've been looking at this FBI and I'm going, well, whose side are they on? What's the MO for? Why would they do something like this? Why would they stick their necks out? I don't get it. And, you know, you look and let's be honest. They basically screwed Hillary Clinton over when they announced that 2 days before the election. And they're definitely going, they've been trying to pin something on Donald Trump for 2 years. They're not that political. I think they're just power brokers. I think they just try and get the goods on people because I can't see any motivation. You're not protecting the country from the likes of my son. That's crazy. Like I said, the whole thing befuddles me. All I can think of is that the whole J. Edgar Hoover, get the dirt on anybody, whoever, that thinking has never left the FBI. You know, they'd assured us that they got rid of that they buried all that with Hoover. And, that was the old school days. We did terrible things. We would never do anything like that again. Yeah?
Right. No, I hear you. And their main, from what I understand of the case anyways, and please do correct me if I'm wrong, the FBI is basically, and again, they're using, you know, this ProPublica investigation. Also, I know I wanted to get your take on the OC Weekly, which is, a news outlet out here in California in Orange County. The OC Weekly was really going after RAM for a very long time, you know, running hit pieces similar to ProPublica, which was basically portraying RAM and I guess the alt-right more generally at Charlottesville and some of these other rallies as the perpetrators of the violence, right? As the people that showed up, that they showed up with a specific purpose, in fact, to violently assault their political rivals, when I think if you objectively look at the situation, that was absolutely not the case at all. And 9 times out of 10, it was the other side. It was the left-wingers, the Antifa groups, that were explicit in their intention, you know, to shut down these various rallies. And that was certainly the case at the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, where, you know, again, you noted that the organizers had a permit from, you know, local authorities. It was permitted by the city. They went before a judge just to, you know, to reaffirm it. So they did everything by the book legally, and yet the Antifa group show up again, openly saying, you know, even on some of their websites and on social media, that their intent is to shut down the event using violence if necessary. And yet the entire situation has been flipped. And this is a theme.
It's shocking.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a theme that we've seen all throughout, well, really the past 4 years now. I mean, ever since, you know, Trump really got involved in politics and people were showing up to these big Trump rallies and the media was out there saying that, you know, Trump supporters are the ones engaging in violence against, you know, the counter protesters, when it was just truly, totally the opposite. And I think that was certainly the case with the Rise Above movement, at least as far as I can tell. I mean, I don't think that the FBI or the federal government has a very strong or legitimate case when they say that, look, these guys were literally conspiring over the internet to cross state lines to engage in a riot, when there's really just very little evidence to demonstrate that. I mean, they were there to attend the rally, to engage in their constitutionally protected free speech rights, to stand up for what they believe in. And they themselves were attacked for that, not the other way around.
It's so as a concerned parent who didn't really know what was going on, I had to do my homework and I had to look a lot of the stuff up and I had to go, what's Tom involved in? What's going on? And it becomes, I'm not the FBI, I'm just a Muppet, right? It became real easy for me to tell, because you know, nowadays we have to pick our news, you know, is it Fox News? Is it CNN? You know, you get, is it lefty? Is it moderate? Right? So you kind of hit a bunch of sources. Hey, every place that these kids had a rally that the Antifa didn't show up was completely peaceful. And every place that the Antifa showed up, it becomes very obvious time after time, repeated pattern that they show up. In other words, some of this might have made sense if Tom showed up to an Antifa rally. They don't go to Antifa rallies. They don't go to whatever it is, who are those guys who sat around in beach chairs on Wall Street. You know, they don't go to occupy things and start trouble. The Antifa goes to their rallies and starts trouble. So this is so obvious. And it's just like, I had always thought the FBI, you know, Quantico, trained professionals, impassive people, highly trained professionals, people that have to get it. You have to get a law degree to even become an FBI agent. I mean, there's a lot required of you. We give these people a lot of latitude because we want them to protect us from terrorists, from drug dealers, from, you know, other conspiracies and plots from other countries that may be, you know, enemies of ours, right? I think we've made a huge mistake, because so you give these people latitude and you try and give them ambiguity to be able to, you know, take action. And what do? They end up with a bunch of kids. What are we doing here? We're trying the wrong team. It doesn't look like you investigated anything. It looks like completely lazy. I don't think anybody's looked at this case. What they did was, my son lived with my brother about a mile away. My brother's a Los Angeles fireman too, probably the most liberal one in the world. But they attacked his house at 4 o'clock. They kicked his door down, flash banged his dogs, had the, you know, the machine guns out, dragged these guys out into the street in front of their house, in front of the whole neighborhood, right? Took, you know, my brother has a couple handguns, took his computer. They took everything like that. And why? Why would you do a no-knock arrest warrant those are dangerous. If you've ever been a police officer or know someone that's, people don't like doing no-knock warrant issues because they're dangerous. I mean, there's plenty of cases where the wrong people get shot. Somebody shoots at the cop not knowing that they're cops because it's 4 a.m. People get killed. So you only use them when you think, hey, there's a grave danger of someone destroying evidence, or there's a grave danger of someone grabbing a hostage or escaping and doing great bodily harm to somebody. That's the only time you're allowed to do this stuff. Tom, they could have just gave Tom a letter. Hey, come down to Los Angeles. We want to talk to you. If you're not here by X date, we're coming to pick you up. We're going to issue an arrest warrant. I guarantee you Tom would have been there. Or any of the other boys. So this is nuts. So just from its inception, it's they're acting like Tom is some kind of terrorist drug dealer type or something. Then no bail. Okay, I go to the hearing here in Los Angeles. Some crazy judge talks about, oh, I can see you've crossed state lines before when you went to Berkeley. And we're all going, I wonder if she knows Berkeley's in California or not. You know, what's she talking about? Tom's public defender doesn't say anything. Nobody wants to insult this godlike persona, right? So we just kind of go, she denies him bail after going on about what a terrible person he is, which, you know, nobody knows what she's talking about. So anyhow, that was crazy. So he's been held with no bail all this time. There is no amount, right? What? Not only that, What is he doing in Charlottesville? No one from the FBI or any other agency is trying to say that he did anything wrong at Charlottesville other than go to it. The only thing that's in question is whether the scuffle that occurred between him, what may be him and somebody else at Berkeley, that's in California. So they grab all these guys, they shove them on a plane, take them to Charlottesville, Virginia, deny them bail, and then you get this. All of them are held in protective custody, which means 24/7 isolation with the lights off for 3 months. So we were calling and complaining, hey, this violates the Nelson Mandela laws. What are we doing here? You know, I thought we learned that you're not supposed to treat people like this, especially when they're not convicted and you haven't done anything. And there was no accusation that he'd, committed any prison crimes, which is usually what, you know, you commit a crime in prison. That's what they put you in isolation for. No, nobody said that. They just said, well, we don't have any room anywhere else. It's like, really? Then let him out. Then let him make bail. If you, the FBI, can't figure out how to put this guy in something bigger than a closet with the light on 24/7 and not being able to talk to anybody or be around any other, it's just so biased. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to break one of them and ratting out the other one so we can go, aha. And that's all it was. So wow. He's still being held without bail.
So it's such an unjust situation. It's such an outrage.
It's if this happened in North Korea, we'd all be throwing our arms up in the air and go, oh, wow. See, aren't you glad you live in America? See what those bastards do? They do whatever they want with you. Well, this has been a wake up call for me. I absolutely still feel like I need to be pinched. I'm in a nightmare. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And I'm so sorry to hear about all this. It's such a travesty. You've kind of already described it, but what has been your experience with some of these federal authorities? I mean, have they been responsive to your complaints or to your questions?
No.
Or are they pretty much just blowing you off?
Totally just blowing me off. I've talked to his lawyer. His lawyer seems like a pretty good person. He was making complaints. I tried calling the ACLU because he was able to talk to me on the phone for like 10 minutes, sometimes, and I'm hearing it in his voice that, you know, after a couple months, he's starting to spin. He is starting to crack. Not that he's about to rat on everybody, but I mean, he's getting stir crazy, going nuts. And I was very concerned, and I'm calling his lawyer, his lawyer's calling, and they just blew us off. And so finally, they finally moved all these guys to another prison. And after James, what's his name, was convicted, a couple weeks after that, they put them all in general population. And so it's, you know, he's still in federal prison, but it's much improved. I mean, they had him locked in something the size of a closet. I'm not exaggerating. And it was obviously they were doing this to break him down. And that's,
yeah, no, it certainly seems like that. And it certainly seems like they're trying to set a precedent for people that are engaged in this sort of activism, for people that are concerned about the sort of issues that these guys are concerned about, which are entirely valid, entirely legitimate concerns and political perspectives to hold. Disagree with them or agree with them. I mean, I don't think that it's anybody could interpret what they were doing, what they were about as any sort of violence or criminality or anything like that, or terrorism. I mean, this is just a total outrage at, with what's going on with these guys. Where is their case currently at right now? I mean, they've been locked up for about 5 months now, or maybe a little bit longer. Where are we at with the case? Are they going to go to trial? What's going on?
So that's what's amazing as well. So on April 11th, we were going to have a all the gentleman's attorneys petition the court for a dismissal, just based on the unconstitutionality of the crazy law. The only people that they've ever tried to charge with this law have all been kicked out because of the unconstitutionality of it. And the most famous was the Chicago 8 in like 1968. I mean, this is a law that they just had to pull out from underneath the bed. It makes no sense. It has a lot to do with, did you use a phone before you travel across state lines and a Visa card and your intent to commit a riot, which, how can you say? So here's the story as I know it. So they applied to Charlottesville to get a permit to protest them taking the statue down. Charlottesville gave them a permit. Then the left, Antifa and the left's applied for, said, oh, well, we want to go and we want to have a permit too. So then they came back to these guys and they said, oh, well, hey, bad news. The other guys applied too, so we're going to move yours. And they said, well, what do you mean? We were here first. How can you move ours? Because the other guy, well, we don't think it'd be safe if you guys had the thing together. Well, we think that maybe you should move theirs. That would make more sense. So it goes back and forth. And it finally goes to the Supreme Court there. And they have to say, hey, you know what? Just like the colleges want to say, oh, well, it costs too much in security to let somebody from the right speak here, so we'll just never do it again. You can't get off the hook that easy. You're going to have to make this work. So I think what people don't understand is that these guys were the people that had a permit. They had a permit to be there, as confirmed by a federal judge, as confirmed by a Supreme Court, right? So they're trying to attend their own rally. And then the left just, the Antifa guys just said, well, we're going to blockade their entrance. So if you want to learn about this, actually, don't take it from me. Don't learn it from me. Don't learn it from some guy on the internet. Look up something called the Heaphy Report, H-E-A-P-H-Y. And this is a report that was requested, that was paid for by the city of Charlottesville when they said, how did things get so out of hand? What happened here? So they paid a disinterested group to investigate and find out. And they basically tell you, everybody screwed up. The cops never should have, the cops ended up smashing the groups together. They let the left in first, and the left blockaded the entrance to where the guys were trying to have their protest. So, I mean, there was no way this was going to go right. The city totally mishandled it. The police department totally mishandled it. And then they did this nobody do anything response, even after they'd been warned by the state police. Everybody knew this is, this was not a surprise. This is something that took months and months to of wrangling back and forth. So really, if you want to blame somebody for a riot, in this case, I think it would. I think the conclusion of the Heaphy was saying is that you could easily blame the city, because you and I, I'm just a Muppet. Here, if I had to do that, I would say, hey, check it out. You're going to get the northwest corner of the field. You're going to get the southeast corner of the field. Protest all you want. Anybody comes, within 10 feet of the center of the field is going to jail. Have a nice day. And if anybody tries to cross the line or tries to go towards the other group, boom, they're gone. You arrest them. How hard is this? This is, that's what government does, right? They protect people. They protect people's freedom of speech. They protect them from being bullied by other groups, right? That's the role of government, is to make sure there's a level playing field for all people and that they can be heard. There's no way I know more about this than they do. And yet they just failed completely in this instance, and almost looked like they were trying to cause. I don't think that's the case, because I don't think they're that confident that they but the epically failed to control the situation and they caused it. And we've been continuing to cause this by letting Antifa misbehave. And on contrast to the Rise Above movement, if you look at, Antifa can have protests and they'll start punching their own people out. I mean, there's some guy or the guy's just punching people in a car up in Portland, Oregon, because there's nobody there to punch. You know what I mean? There's nobody there to raise hell against. So, the obviousness just kills me that nobody in the federal system now that's pushing these guys up against all this 10 years of prison wouldn't go, you know, we're really stepping out here. We're really heading. These guys could sue us because what's going to happen is, so let's just say on April 11th, and I hope that somebody finally reviews this thing and looks at the dismissals and goes, yeah, this is nuts. And they kick them loose. So now these guys have been in prison for 6 months. They've already won. Right. So these guys have been in prison for 6 months with no way out. They would not give any of the guys in Charlottesville, any of the guys who went in Charlottesville, we would not let them out on any amount of bail. It didn't matter whether you had a jet airplane. So, I'm flabbergasted that you can imprison somebody for 6 months for, get this, based on a lefty news organization's opinion. Be careful who you talk to.
Yeah.
Be careful how much power, be careful of the press, because I would have never thought if somebody asked me 2 years ago, could this ever happen? I would say, no, that's crazy. Shut up. You're in a psychotic fantasy until it happened to my kid. So basically ProPublica decides to write a hit piece on these guys as well. But ProPublica was the one the FBI cited, not the Orange County stuff. But so they got busy and made a case for the FBI, and the FBI didn't investigate it and just. Nobody's really looked at this thing, and they're just locking these kids up. And then, you know, so they offered Tom a 2-year deal. They offered, I think, all of them a 2-year deal. And Tom calls me because, you know, he has a girlfriend. He wants to get married. He's worried. He's like, well, if I do 10 years, I don't know if she'll even be able to have kids by the time I get out. I mean, that could be a thing. You know, he's like, should I take the deal? And I had to tell him, I said, you know, it's hard for me to say this because there's a lot at stake. But I think you have to be brave. Don't let them make you out to be something you're not. If you let them call yourself a criminal, you're not a criminal. You didn't do anything wrong. If you admit to doing something wrong, it might seem like the strategic thing to do to trade 10 years for two. I said, but if I were you, son, gut it out. Trust in the American justice system that someone will pick up the pieces of this and go, oh, my God, we got to fix this. And so that's our hope still at this point.
Yeah, boy, it's incredibly, I don't have words. It's just so outrageous what's happened to these guys. And there's a number of other guys that are locked up here in California and also, you know, of course, in Charlottesville. It's outrageous. It's a total disgrace. It's a total sham of our justice system. You know, I really don't have words. It's just so unjust what's happened. And really, I do. I mean, this is my own personal opinion. And I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the federal government and these very malicious left-wing news outlets like ProPublica, and there's many others, I think it's clear that they want to make examples of these guys and, you know, show the country, hey, look, if you're a right-winger, if you're proud of your race and you're out there and you're being active and you're, you know, legitimately expressing your views and exercising your First Amendment, you know, we're going to come after you. And, you know, this proves it. And so it's a very terrible precedent to be set. And, you know, I agree with you. I mean, I think that Tom and the rest of these guys should be fighting back in the face of all odds. I know it's certainly an uphill battle, but
It's certainly frightening.
It's definitely frightening, but it's also a very righteous struggle. And we're just about out of time. I wanted to kind of conclude and ask, how can people support you, your family? How can people support Tom? And how can people support, you know, the other members of Rise Above that are involved in this situation?
Well, I guess one thing I'd like to say is that, you know, I've met some people throughout this strange odyssey that have just been incredibly open and giving and helpful And I mean, I'll be friends with some of these people for life. Glenn Allen is definitely one of them. Ben, I'm struggling right now because I'm old and I can't think of his last name, but another guy that helped make me, that went out of his way to help me make the video and do some things. But what I'm a little bit bothered by is that there's a lot of people that talk about this. There's a lot of people that feel strongly about this. And there's some people that do something about this. And whether I agree with my son 100% or not, I'll always be proud of him that he really felt that here he stood, he could do no other. And he did what he had to do. And some of the people that they were protecting at some of these rallies, I've been trying to get a hold of some. This is very difficult because I've done this before, and then it gets put up on the internet, and then YouTube shuts the guy down. And I mean, we're not certainly no more controversial than the discussion we're having right now and have had so far. And I mean, these guys just continue to edit and dox and bust down on anybody that says anything other than, yeah, those guys are, you know, killers or whatever or something violent. There's some people, I think, from the moderate right that could help. And that's some of the people that Tom's group was trying to help. And one of them's Laura Southern, who was at one of these rallies. And I've tried to get a hold of her. Obviously, I don't have her personal email. I have no real solid way to get a hold of her. But I've sent emails to organizations she's with. I was hoping she would contact me and at least say, hey, you were there. You would be at least a credible person that could say, hey, no, we were dodging river stones. They were spraying us with bear mace. And some guy got hit with an M100, you know, some explosive. It hit him in the leg. We had to walk him off. Two guys had to walk him off. I mean, he was injured by an explosive device and stuff. And I'd love it if someone besides Tom's group or someone that would be harder for them to partition into as a hate group person would support them. But largely what I've seen is everyone's afraid to, because nobody wants to be associated with some people that are scheduled to go down as Nazi hate groups, and nobody wants any of this sticking to them. And then I think it's time. I think it's not just because it's my son, but I think the extremism that this case presents is this, you know, it doesn't have to be Tom's group. It could be the group that your son's in. It could be any group. It could be any organization that has strong political beliefs that could be opposed by someone else with strong political beliefs. So it could be an anti-abortion rally. It could be a pro-abortion rally. It could be anything. And this goes down and somebody takes a side against. And if they're successful here, they figured out how to edit this country through the media. And that, I don't see that that's ever happened before. I think we're at a turning point, and I think people need to be brave. I think people need to stop this, and people need to publicly shout out about this and let the FBI know and the Department of Justice know that this is wrong and it won't be tolerated. And we'll go after the people that helped cause this happen. We'll unelect them next election. We'll get rid of them. I think they need to feel some pain for what they've done to my son and his friends.
Yes, sir. I completely agree with everything you just said. I mean, it's time that we stood up and stopped being bullied and intimidated by these people, especially when we've done nothing wrong, or when, you know, for example, your son has done nothing wrong, but simply, you know, engage in his constitutionally protected First Amendment rights. You know, again, it's a total travesty. Well, I know. Is there any way to support his case? Is there any organization that you want to promote before we wrap up here?
Glenn Allen set up an organization. It would be hard for me to say it right, but it's in the letter that they handed you. If you could put that in script on this on your report, add that to it or something. I think that would be helpful. But it's a 501c3 nonprofit called Free Expression Foundation Incorporated. And that's at Post Office Box 1479, Upper Marlboro, Maryland, 20773.
Yes, absolutely. I am familiar with the organization, and I will certainly have links over to their website, and I will also post that P.O. box that you just read when I post this program. And yeah, I highly encourage everybody to, you know, to support this. This is a very important case, obviously, as we've detailed. It's a grave injustice and one that no American, regardless of your political views or your racial views, this should be, you know, we should not tolerate this. This is wrong what has happened. And, you know, we've got to rectify this and we've got to fight back. I firmly believe that.
I'm frightened, actually, because I don't think the legal parameters of the case really have anything to do with anything at this point. I don't think he'll get a fair trial. I'm not confident in that 100% because, you know, at a fair trial, they were supposed to review this evidence. They should have already decided never to pick this case up. So I'm scared. And I really think that public opinion has much more to do than the legal technicalities of this case. And I think if people started pushing back, and I'm trying to figure out how to do that. I'm trying to figure out where the buttons are that you push. But it's the Department of Justice. It's the federal government. These guys are huge. So I'm trying to find a place where, no, these are the people you want to, these three guys, you want to be shooting these guys letters, and you want to be raising hell with the city of Charlottesville. So I'm still struggling with trying to learn where the pressure points are, because I think we really need to, you know, at least start firing letters at congressmen, at, because they need to know that people are paying attention to this. And as fast as things get shut down when they're put on YouTube or anything else, and as fast as they'll kill PayPal accounts if people are trying to help, because that's happened a couple times already. It's really hard to be ahead of the game here until it's all over. We've got a few months left. His trial will be in June, most likely. And at that point, like I said, even if he's found not guilty, he'll have done 9 months. And I'm not confident any longer that I understand the U.S. justice system and the outcome that this case will have. I hope, but I can't say 100%.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I hear you, and you know, sadly, I think you're probably right. I mean, it is it's proven to be already a very unjust justice system, right? I mean, this is an outrage. What's going on? But I do believe that we do got to fight back. We got to be aware of these situations. We got to stand up against them and not be intimidated, not be coward, and really, you know, fight back in whatever way we can. So, Jim, thank you so much for joining me. I'll definitely stay in touch, and hopefully we can maybe get an update from you in the future as we proceed here. But you know, really my heart goes out to you. It's really an outrage what's going on. And, you know, I hope people do, you know, consider supporting your cause. I really do.
Well, I do deeply appreciate your sympathy and your help and your bravery in getting the word out on this. So thank you very much, John.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. I really do appreciate it, and I will definitely be in touch. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in. We will talk to you all real soon.